Welcome to Midland Classical Academy's Good Night Dad podcast. Our promise is to partner with parents to develop Christ-like leaders. Now here are your hosts, General Eccles and Brandon Schumann.
Good day and welcome again to the Good Night Dad podcast. I'm General Eccles and I'm joined again by Brandon Schumann. Hey, Brandon.
How's it going?
Really good. Today we're going to be talking about great books. And for those of you who aren't familiar with even the concept of great books at Midland Classical Academy, that's going to be our focus. I've got to tell you, about 10 years ago, whenever we were looking for a school, and there were a series of circumstances kind of dictated that we needed to find a school and find one quick because school had already started everywhere else. We'd never even heard of Midland Classical and got to looking around and went to the internet even 10 years ago, and we found this school that was actually in Midland. It was conveniently located. The price seemed doable, but the website honestly was pretty horrible. Basically, all it was a logo and then this list, this long list of these books that my first instinct wouldn't have been to call them great. It would have been thick books, long books, maybe even boring books, stuff that I had never read. After I got over my initial impression of the website, I was just intimidated. And I was intimidated for my kids because they would be the ones that have to read this stuff. With that being the background, I just ask you, Brandon, because you seem to be well aware of great books, have a lot of experience in that. So why is it that we do great books?
The reason we read these great books is because in them is the foundations of who we are as a society and as a culture. These great books, we start in eighth grade, and we begin with Homer's Iliad and the Odyssey. And Homer lived sometime around 700 or 800 BC. So these things start way, way, way back at the very foundations of everything. From these books, powerful ideas are put forth. There's this ongoing conversation. I believe it was Mortimer Adler that said, by reading these great books, we get to take part in this great conversation. And what he meant by that was Homer will write some great ideas in his epic poetry, the Iliad and the Odyssey, and then centuries later, somebody else will take that and they'll read it and then they'll add to it and begin to develop some of his ideas or take them in different ways, or they'll challenge them. And so this thing is ongoing from like Homer to Plato and Aristotle to Cicero to Shakespeare to Dante, all the way up to the present times. Our culture is based on this thought. By reading these great books, we get to see who we are and understand the thoughts that are directing the current flow of our society. Great books as a class at MCA is typically geared up to where it's a three-hour class. On Mondays, we have a one-hour writing lab, and usually we spend those days kind of working on writing. And then around the middle of the week, usually on Wednesdays, we'll have a two-hour class where we get to just discuss the readings that was assigned that week and then talk about the ideas that are in there. With great books, there's a quote that kind of formulates what these classes are about, and it's by Sir Francis Bacon. And he says that reading maketh a full man, conference a ready man, and writing an exact man.
That's good.
What he meant by those things is reading helps us to develop our mind. It gives us thoughts to think about and helps us to really consider the world that we live in. Conference is more of an archaic word of saying just discussion or conversation. But when you have just this exchange of ideas where there's more than one person in the room, it's, well, I think this, well, I think that. And so it forces us to hold our ideas accountable, to see, can they stand the light of day? What needs refining? What needs changing? And then what writing does is it helps us to express our thoughts precisely. When we're having a conversation that's a lot of free flow, we're not really thinking about everything that we're about to say. We're just thinking about, here's what I'm currently saying right now. Writing is a different art where you get to just hone things down and say, here's precisely what I want to communicate. In our Great Books classes, we get to train our students in those three things of teaching them how to read and consider high levels of thought. We get to teach them how to engage in a dialogue or in a debate in a respectful, meaningful way. And then we also teach them and train them in the skill of communicating their thoughts more exactly and precisely and effectively to other people. That's what the heartbeat of what classical education is. This great books curriculum, it forms the core of what classical education entails, and it develops all three of those skills: reading and thinking, discussing, and writing.
What does that look like in a practical sense? What is a typical class, what does that consist of? Assuming they've already read the material that's been assigned.
on a, say, a Wednesday 2-hour discussion, there's typically some sort of a reading grade that's taken. Sometimes it's a quiz, sometimes it's some questions that are done. There's an assessment where, as a teacher, we measure how well did you read. And on that point, a lot of students are tempted to use Spark Notes. I would really encourage you as dads to discourage your kids from just defaulting to Spark Notes. Will they make a better grade on a quiz if they use Spark Notes? The answer is probably so. That's likely to be the case because they're going to have more succinct facts and information and understand better how the story all fits together. But that's not what our goal is. Our goal is not to say, can you outline the plot points of this Shakespeare tragedy? Can you name the 50 characters that are in there and what they're like or what they're wearing or what they said? That's not really what our purpose is. We do take reading quizzes to hold students accountable to reading, but what Spark Notes does is it short circuits the student's ability to read and develop their own thoughts and opinions for themselves. What I try to tell my students is, hey, if you want to live your life and just think other people's thoughts, if that's the kind of person you want to be, go read Spark Notes, because they'll tell you, here's what you're supposed to get out of this reading. Understand these thoughts. You can do that, and somebody else is doing all of those thoughts for you. But what I'm most interested in, what our teachers are most interested in, is trying to help students develop their own capacities to think for themselves and to develop their own ideas. Their ideas may be silly, they may be foolish, but if they're willing to come to class saying, here's what I got from the reading, I put in a lot of effort and here's the little bit that I gleaned from it, and they're willing to do that honestly and openly, when the entire class does that, then there's a lot of material that you can work with, and then students can then begin to develop their own thoughts and ideas and develop that skill and that capacity. They're going to forget what happened in Hamlet. That's not important in life, what happens in Hamlet, but learning how to read things like Hamlet and learning how to read and consider other great works of literature or even just the sports page or ESPN.com, learning how to critically read and analyze something and form your own ideas is a very underdeveloped skill in society. We want to teach students how to read these books so they can think for themselves in society. Another key thought with this, too, in the process of this conversation, is most of what we read in these books are really deadly, and I mean, there's no other way of saying it, of just satanic lies. And so there's a lot of deceit that are in these books, from the Iliad to Nietzsche. There's a lot of really bad philosophy that's out there. What we're trying to do is we're exposing our kids, we're exposing our teenagers to these really intoxicating and potentially deadly ideas. But we're training them to do this in such a way that they're able to take every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. They're going to get these ideas, they're exposed to these ideas every time they click on the internet, every time they turn on the TV, and they're certainly going to get it when they go off to college. The question is, what do you do with these ideas when you encounter them? By reading these great books, they've already been exposed to where these ideas originated from. Then when they encounter them in their more pop culture form, they are exposed to it and can hopefully be better equipped to analyze, well, here's the end result. If I pursue this enticing thought, this is the likely result.
As a parent, one thing that we found invaluable and pretty cool testimony for our family and just the value of what Brandon's describing, these are dangerous ideas. A lot of them are potentially even more dangerous if they're allowed to grow and come to fruition. But what we found is, whether it's instances of song lyrics that our boys can recognize themes and they can take that back to one of these studies, one of these books, all the way back to the source, instead of, they're often around friends, especially once our oldest one got to college, it kind of comes out that so much of what's being taught culturally, educationally, is founded back to these principles, these teachings from these great books. But our son has the ability to properly discern and identify the source of that, where a lot of people are presenting this as new and fabulous and this whole new idea, when it's just not so. So he's in a place where he can really evaluate and discern, and we value that.
Reading is the most important skill that they develop in great books. When students come in, they generally don't know how to read great literature. If they are willing to commit to that and not just take the shortcuts, by the end of it, they know how to read great literature. But the other two things that we do in that are discussion. We spend 2 hours just talking about the ideas that are there. And so where students come to class, they share their ideas. As they share their ideas, they have to defend them. Their thoughts get challenged. Why do you think this particular idea? Why is your opinion this way? They learn how to defend their ideas, refine them towards what's more true and more accurate. They also learn how to argue and disagree respectfully. People today are so quick to get offended if you disagree with anybody or if somebody disagrees with you. What these discussions do is they teach, we start in eighth grade, and there's a lot of coaching that goes on in eighth grade of, that was kind of rude how you said that, of coaching students how to respectfully challenge somebody else's thoughts and how to not feel personally threatened or intimidated when somebody challenges your thought and how to respond with grace and to be as articulate as you can. And again, the overall goal is not to be right or wrong in these discussions, but to move towards what's true. And then the third thing that these classes are about, again, is just the writing. And that those are opportunities to, after you've had these conversations in class, it's where students are given the opportunity to express their opinions thoughtfully, rooted in the works that they're reading, where they're analyzing complex thoughts in literature, and then synthesizing it and saying, here's my opinion on this, and here's my reasons for why I think this. And being able to precisely say and communicate effectively what their thoughts are. As a school, our philosophy on writing, here's the big secret on writing, and we get this from Fred Librand, is the secret to great writing is you write something, you get help, and then you make it better. If we can teach our students to just put their thoughts out there, just get something out there, and then you can improve it. So much of good writing is actually editing. Write something, get help, and make it better.
One thing I'm seeing as you're describing all this is every part of what you're describing is pretty demanding, much more so demanding than the typical teenage American life kind of deal. It seems like everybody's got an opinion. Everybody feels super crazy strong about their opinion. And most of our opinions, even as adults, are unfounded or less than deserving of the weight that we give them, I guess. And it'd be a different world if people really put the effort in up front to establish that opinion, to discuss it with people they trust, to evaluate that, to get it beat up and handed back to them. Revisions are required of our thoughts and our attitudes and our opinions, just how much better off we'd be.
That's what great books is all about. It's seeing here's where these thoughts originated and understanding where they come from. And then through the course of those conversations, you're just constantly revising. I had never thought of it that way, but that's what conversation is. It's revising and advancing our answers and our ideas. And that's what we're trying to train our students to do through the course of those conversations. As dads, how can you be a part of this great books journey, particularly at the upper school? I would say kind of three ways. One is you can read the books with your kids. Like maybe pick a book each semester and say, okay, I'm going to read this alongside you. And that way you get to taste and see what that's like and see, man, this is hard. And maybe give you a little bit of empathy for what your kids are going through. But it also gives you just a platform and a common experience in which you can dialogue with your kids with. We have online something that I've written called Guide to Great Books. And so you can go to guidetogreatbooks.com. And they're not spark notes. What they provide is kind of an overview of what a lot of these books entail of like, here's the big questions that they raise up and they ask. And it gives some tips on how to read these books. Because reading Aristotle is completely different than reading Shakespeare, which is completely different than reading Soren Kierkegaard. There's some tips on how you can approach these readings, and those are available. And we encourage students to read those. We encourage parents to read those so they can help encourage their kids in their great books experience. Another one is just, again, discussing what you read or discussing what your kids are reading at home, continuing that conversation at home, engaging with your own kids, the ideas that they're encountering in these great books classes. And then a third and not necessarily final way, but a third practical way that you can get involved with your kids is by reading the writing that they turn in. So when they write a rough draft, read their rough draft, help them edit it. As tutors, we often encourage our students to take home their paper and then give an editing guide to say, okay, edit this paper at home and ask your parents to edit this paper with you. And so that way you can participate in your students' education and be involved in this great books process.
Well, Brandon, thanks so much for helping us better understand great books at Midland Classical. This concludes this episode of the Good Night Dad podcast. We thank everybody for listening, and our prayers are still for dads and anyone listening that you continue engaging minds, pursuing Christ, and discovering greatness.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Goodnight Dad podcast, brought to you by Midland Classical Academy. Engaging minds, pursuing Christ, discovering greatness.